Hi, how's it going?
Hi, good, good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I watched the documentary. I just wanted to ask you a few questions.
Sure.
You kind of went on a crazy adventure.
Yes, we did. And that was just the first one. The book tells the story of all the subsequent ones we had to do in Africa and Australia and the Navajo Reservation. It's so stressful.
Right, exactly.
And we're going to somehow keep this tantruming incontinent, you know, kid on across Mongolia, you know, no washing machine, you know. What do we see? And my point was, well, you know, because going to the supermarket is so stressful, we might as well go to Mongolia. Because frankly, we sort of are going to Mongolia every time we go to the supermarket. And, you know, this is what my gut is telling me. And also, she's learned after a while to trust my gut. I think one of the differences for me as a British South African is that we are actually taught as children in Africa to trust our guts in a way that people here are not. And there is a really good reason. So, for example, if you grew up in South Africa, you might speak three languages, might speak four languages, but there's eight official languages in that country. You will often be in parts, you know, where you don't really necessarily know what's being spoken. It's a very violent country. It has dangerous animals. You spend a lot of time in the bush, and we also spend a lot of time hunting. And some of those animals will hunt you back, and they're sort of dangerous people too. And so the idea of trusting your gut instinct, trusting your gut feeling, is something that is very much in the culture of growing up there. And so I think she had realized this and over years of living with me. And so although she was sort of rolling her eyes once again at her insane husband, what she actually said was, okay, finally, for me it's win-win because if it all goes to hell in a handbasket, I can say I told you so forever. And if it goes right, well, it goes right, and that's great. You know, so, you know, she has a sense of humor. She absolutely married to me.
Yeah, that's a good thing to have. I raised a child with autism myself. So I found it really interesting some of the parallels I could draw between what you guys experienced and
No
what we have
doubt.
experienced. It's pretty amazing. There was one point where Rowan had kind of rejected being on the horse and kind of sought security in the van instead. And you said that you had learned that it was more important for you to be there for him than to have these expectations. And I thought that that was very, very real because you feel like they're attached to something and then they attach to something else and you kind of have to roll with it. You know, that point where you said you were a better father because he forced you to listen. Would you say to other parents that it is more important to try to teach them to adapt socially to the world or to help them find their own way as people?
I think that it's not either or. What one wants to do is strike a harmony between those two things. But most people, unfortunately, are told by sometimes over-aggressive therapists or family members or whatever that they should fall more on the side of trying to make their kids abide by socially acceptable behaviors and less on the other side. But it's, of course, it should be the other way around. All children, autistic or not, we know this. We know this from our own childhood. We responded as kids, you did, I did, very, very well to people that recognized our interests, recognized us, made us feel seen, made us feel heard. We would actually adapt our behaviors very well to those people because it was the reasonable thing to do. We trusted them. They earned credibility with us. And we often rebelled against the people that were coercive. Why would an autistic human being be any different?
Right.
So given that a lot of these kids are what I call therapied out, you know, they're at school, and then they go to their ABA, and then they go to their speech, they go to their OT, they go to this, they go to that. They're effectively doing sort of adult work weeks, and they're being told by all these adults all the time, be different to who you are. No, what you are is not really cool. No, you can't just stim out in the corner. You've got to do this, you've got to do this, you've got to. And they become exhausted mentally, emotionally. No, striking the harmony is breaking the pattern that we have in our culture of trying to over-direct.
Mm-hmm.
So what seems to us like then massively going in the direction of following the child is actually only meeting them halfway because
right.
we've started usually from so far, such an extreme position on the other side. And where neurotypical kids will put up with the stresses of that to some degree, although they will often rebel massively later.
Mm-hmm.
The stresses of that, I think, for a young autist are too great. So one has to revise one's approach, yeah. And it's counterintuitive. What I found is that there were things I remember that my mother, you know, used to get on my back about, like, you must sit at tables, you must do this, you must do this. And I remember finally saying to my mother, I'm going to make you a bet now. I'm going to bet you $100 that by the age of 10, you'll totally be sitting at the table if we need him to. But I'm not going to pick that battle now at 6 when what I really need to do is get better protein inside him. And if he needs to truck around doing that, I'm going to let him truck around doing that. And then later on, I will address this issue when I feel he's ready. And I won my bet. But one of my strengths for that, I've got two strengths. It's one, I'm a journalist. So I'm a good observer. But, you know, so I can notice what people like. This kid likes to do this. Let's do this. You know, so I'm the opposite of ABA. You know, I won't say to a kid, if you do this boring thing that you don't want to do, I will reward you by going to the trampoline where you really want to go. I'll say, let's go straight to the trampoline where I know where you want to be. And while we're on the trampoline, let's have a conversation about this thing. Which one is going to work better? You know, the other strength is I'm a horse trainer. And horses, interestingly, are not dissimilar to people on the spectrum in that they're governed by their amygdala, the fight, flight, freeze part of the brain. And they're prey species, so they solve their problems by running away. And they weigh what a truck weighs. So if you're training young horses and you push too much and you freak them out, you'll get flattened and your bones will break. And anybody who has worked a lot with horses in their life has been humbled by having that happen to them. And so it teaches you to be much more patient and to know that you'll get there in the end and to observe what's the horse telling you, what's his body language, what does he need right now, what reassurance. You know, this is about comfort and reassurance and winning trust first and observation. And then let's think about the things we want to teach rather than just like in at the deep end. That's never going to work for an autistic kid.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And I think if those approaches worked, we'd know by now. We'd have all these autistic kids graduating, you know, all their ABA programs and starting the new tech companies, but it's not happening.
Yeah. There are a lot of proponents for ABA, and that was before you answered it within your answer to the other one. I was going to ask you how you felt about ABA because it's a very rigid model, and it's very, I haven't done it because I've seen so many not so great reviews just about how intensive it is, and it's just, I have a friend that did
like it,
and it took up so much of their time. It's just ridiculous.
And money.
And
these
hands.
Don't forget the money.
Yeah.
And again, if it worked stunningly, I think we'd have noticed.
Right.
and now, of course, you know, there's so much adult autistic testimony coming out just of people saying how awful their experience was.
Right, yes.
You know, I don't think it's like we're reacting in a panic situation. And we're also trying to fix autism with this way, which we shouldn't do. There's nothing to fix. It's perfectly, I do gigs with Temple Grandin all the time. I work directly with Temple Grandin all the time on building the curricula for movement methods that we do. I don't think I need to fix Temple Grandin from being Temple Grandin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But an ABA therapist might.
Yeah.
Because when you are with her, I can tell you that she's not in that persona of that she has her public persona. She is pretty darn autistic, and she'll sit there and she'll stim out and she'll repeat endlessly things in loops and so on. Does that mean that we should be fixing Temple Grandin? I think not. But people absolutely would have, you know, would have said that to her if she was a child or a young adult, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, and it's also ambiguous. There are some good things within ABA, and if you can find the right ABA therapist, you can take a play-based approach. That can be good. But the problem is, as you know, it attracts a certain personality type.
Mm-hmm.
And those people are often a bit kind of mean.
Mm-hmm.
And are often kind of mean to the kids. And I've observed it so many times. What we need is to follow the kids, let them show us what interests them, understand the brain science behind the approach. In our case, it's movement and why. And follow them. And let the process play out slowly. We don't have any difficulty with neurotypical kids accepting that it's a 20-year education from kindergarten through to, mm-hmm. to college. Why are we trying to rush these kids through? Because we're reacting because we think there's a crisis, because we must fix it, because we must take a breath. The kids are who they are, and there are many of them going on to have jobs, careers, love lives, everything. Yes, if you're pooping your pants and you can't make friends and you can't speak, these are things which you need to address. And we can over time. That's Deb, the publicist, trying to get
yeah.
through. That's the beep. I don't know what she wants. But there is no problem to fix. We can teach these skills that we need to teach and then look for the genius. So I'm interested in working with people that do that. And we're about to start this with our new Movement Method website. I'm working with a really amazing woman called Christine Barnett, who wrote a book called The Spark,
mm-hmm.
with her son, Jacob, who's now 17 and getting his PhD at 17 in quantum physics. And he was severe. And I know him. I've met him. I'm working with a woman called Arabella Carter-Johnson in the UK, whose daughter Iris Grace, who's nonverbal and 8, produces these incredible, incredible paintings that are now on sale in galleries for scans of Dosh. And her book is just coming out. We're not trying to fix these people from being who they are. We're saying they have a special genius. Let's, over time, work on the stuff that will give them the skills they need, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not coerce them into it, you know.
Yeah, that's what
and let's not break
me.
Their spirits and break yeah. their not break their genius. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very frustrating just raising a child in American school. It's not very inclusive. And we've had a lot of struggles with that. I was wondering, I had seen a part of the documentary where he said, you know, most other cultures do not separate those with neurological disorders from society. Have you found any in Western society, like any places that you have visited, where they are more accepting, or are you finding more that it's not here?
In Western society, we celebrate things that are above average. We like things to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we reward. So the autists that pop up like this, like Temple Grandin, like Rowan to some degree with his web-based television show, like Jacob Barnett getting his PhD, like the ones that you know appear in the media, etc. We like that. We reward that.
Mm-hmm.
And we regard as anything below that standard not worth dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't just do this with autism in our culture. We do this with everything.
Yep.
You know, it's like everything's got to be above average. Everything's got to be amazing. Everything's got to be spectacular and special and unique. And, of course, that's just not possible. Law of averages just says most of us are going to be a bit average at what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And but very, very, very good at certain things. So I think that we absolutely do see that in our culture. If you go into Silicon Valley, you meet a ton of autists earning very well, being valued for who they are, is they have a certain type of autistic brain.
Right.
And in the arts, you know, you meet mad, crazy, clearly adult autistic people in music and in art and in so forth. In academia, we do too, etc. Where I think it has yet to come, and I think this is where Temple Grandin actually is the biggest pioneer, is in with the classic autists, not the Aspergers, not the savants, but the ones who, just through sheer dint of determination, hard work, and obsessive interest in something, produce work of absolute amazingness. And I think this is going to happen more and more in Western society. Why? Again, it comes back to the law of averages. If we're at 1 in 68, now they're saying it's 1 in 45 kids, well, in 20 years, that's the workforce. And so whether people want to accept it or don't want to accept it, they're actually going to be probably the largest minority within the workforce.
Yeah.
I think that's just going to happen. And then we will see all sorts of interesting change. So we're at the beginning of, I think, a very interesting time with autism now, where we're going to start seeing these shifts over the, and it's economics that drives it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we become more like those indigenous societies who can't afford to waste human resources when you're up there on that mountain in Mongolia, when you're in the Kalahari Desert. We're going to be a bit like that. Right now, we can afford to just marginalize them.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's that percentage of the population, no, then you've actually got to figure out where do they fit in human resources, and now we need to harness them. What's the genius? What's good here? What's going on here? Ah, they have amazing memories. Ah, there's this extraordinary active intellect. Ah, amazing. They have very quiet egos, so they don't cause office politics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe we should be looking for this person in this position, this person. Okay, maybe they need a bit of support here. But then again, so does this other bloke over here for other reasons. He's neurotypical, but he's a bit of an alcoholic. Or this person over here is neurotypical, but very insecure. Or this person is neurotypical, but causes all kinds of crap in the office.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know that there's not necessarily any holy grail in being neurotypical. Lots of neurotypical people throwing themselves off bridges every day, you know, and disappearing down bottles and beating up their wives and kids for this reason or that reason of what the little voices in their head say, without being diagnosed with anything necessarily. People on the spectrum generally are much more peaceful, much less volatile that way, and they seem to go through all of that stages in their very, very young years for neurological reasons, and then they sort of cool out as they get older. It's very interesting. If they get the right input, if they get unconditional love, if they get the right environment, if their spirits are broken and they're pumped full of medication, well, then it's anyone's guess what will happen. But that would be the same for anybody, right?
Right, yeah, that's kind of where we're struggling right now is that the medication issue and
don't do it.
The pressure.
Don't do it.
It's late.
Don't do it.
I know. I told my husband, I usually trust my gut, so he'll ask me. But he's on medication, and I don't really see anything big happening with that. And
here's the problem with the medications. When they put the kids on, they don't have exit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
I
know.
And there have been no long-term studies on what are the effects on young and developing brains of being on these things for years. It's not like an antibiotic where they say, take this for, you know, 10 days while you're in a crisis and then stop taking it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're on, you're on. And it's a slippery slide. And these are very, very strong psychoactive drugs. I wouldn't mess with it. I'd get him off and look for other things. What does he love? What does he love to do?
He loves cars.
So it's all about
telling me this kid, he's
Hyundai.
Yep, that's a Hyundai. Yeah. he can identify, it used to just be the symbols, but now he's not even seeing the symbols anymore. It's just like the body of the car, and he can identify just based mm-hmm. on kind of like Rowan with the hooves and just knowing like from structure where animals belong. It's like that,
right.
Except with cars.
Perfect. And Rowan is actually like that with trucks as well. That's a new thing. So you could teach everything that way. You can teach all the math, all the science, all the history, all the everything. through class. Perfect.
Yeah.
Job done.
Well, yeah, now I've got to get his teacher to do it. You know what I mean?
Well, but first you do it yourself. And that's what movement method, that's what our thing is. If you go on our website, if you go on kidsmustmove.com, and which is actually a page within Horse Boy World, you'll see there's a little short film that explains it and the brain science behind it. And we produce this in conjunction with 4 universities worldwide. It's not pulling this out of our arse. There is an online course, you can do it today, that will show you how to be your own teacher for this and your own therapist. That you don't need to rely on outside resources for this stuff. Only if you choose to or you need to, but, you know, for time reasons or whatever. And even then, better that you have figured it out with your kid first, so that at least that person has to be better than you are.
I am a teacher. And that's the thing, like, I don't want to stress him out by doing more at home after he's had a long day at school. And I've struggled with the idea of maybe, you know, doing the homeschooling
thing. But you don't have to. Here is the thing, the lovely thing about movement method, and this is where it's hard as a teacher, where things are very structured and you stand in front, you know, you're teaching this particular type of structure. Our structures within movement method are invisible to the child.
Mm-hmm.
He will never know that you're teaching him statistics. He will never know that you're teaching, until he's of an age to embrace it. He'll just think he's having a ton of fun with cars, and this information just comes into his head.
Yeah.
It's elegant. It's subtle.
Well, I could use that in
flexible.
A classroom.
It's invisible. You know what I mean? So he won't know when he comes back. He'll just think you're doing all this amazing stuff with cars.
Mm-hmm.
Just we're going to talk about force and acceleration and mass and galvanization of metals and all sorts of things. Oil and fossil fuels and dinosaurs and who were living in those forests when before they became oil and on and so on and so on. You know what I mean?
So it won't
feel like that. And you always have the option of pulling them out. You always have the option of doing it yourself if you want to. Or putting together some cocktail of the two.
Yeah.
It's not. It doesn't have to be either or.
Okay. So I know you just based on what I've seen and heard, you probably, I saw that you were doing like the supplements and things like that.
Yeah, we did give supplements because we were doing chelation, but we never gave psychoactive drugs.
Right. I was going to say, and then you probably don't have any suggestions for how to go about getting that out of the system.
Giving what, sorry?
Well, he's...
Getting it out of the system.
Right, like finding someone, because I do.
Okay, the first thing I would go and consult with a very, very, very good Chinese doctor, a Chinese herbal doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Find the best person in your area. Where are you, Raleigh?
No, I'm in close to the coast.
But there'll be somebody, because you only have to go get herbs sort of once a month.
Mm-hmm.
But I would go to, and then there's a very good woman called Eleanor Silverstein.
Mm-hmm.
And I can email you her. He's based in Orange County. He specializes in the weaning off for kids with epilepsy and also just psychoactive drugs in general. She's been through her own journey with this with her own children, and she's now referred to regularly by doctors in Orange County, which is amazing for getting kids off these medications because it's such a litigious place, Orange County. It's kind of amazing that a doctor would even take that risk.
Right.
And I know her relatively well, and I would talk to her, and I can make some recommendations about looking for the right type of Chinese doctor.
Okay.
We managed to wean my wife, Kristen, off her temporal lobe epilepsy meds that way, which were eroding her brain and making her fall asleep at the wheel of the car and all of these things, where the side effects became much worse than what they were trying to prevent. And the doctors were like, no, you can't do it, and she's been fine for years. You know, so it is possible.
It's the very same issue, actually. And I saw like that when you went, they had like link between her grandmother who had some issues with manic depression. And have you noticed a link between like depression and autism, like in talking to people?
Very much so. Also ADD, also anxiety, also eating disorders. It's all nervous system and brain.
Mm-hmm.
The nervous system feeds some information to the brain that may not be true. Like that breath of wind feels like fire because there's a fluorescent light flickering that now causes my nervous system to have this strange reaction and give misinformation to the brain. And that can happen because of post-traumatic stress disorder too, that a flashing light becomes something that on a neon light on a Chinese restaurant suddenly becomes something that triggers a fear response, even though it actually doesn't need to, blah, 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 blah. And the brain is very plastic. You can retrain it. And again, with movement method, this is sort of what we do. It doesn't happen overnight, that's for sure. But the main thing is removing the bad sensory triggers. So if you think about going out to a place like Mongolia and spending a month or more, or in Africa, or even in rural Texas where I live, really not under fluorescent strip lights, really not around industrial noise, blah, 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 blah. What we find is that it actually helps the kids when they go back into those difficult environments to assimilate them better. And it's the same if you're dealing with depression or PTSD. If you take time out, if you're feeling depressed, this is the easiest one that everybody knows, and you go for a walk in the forest, in the park, for half an hour, you will feel better, even if you have to walk back into the situation that was depressing you in the first place. But if you stay in it and sit in it and stew, or sit at your computer, no, you'll feel worse.
Yeah, I know this all too.
And of course, depression takes away your motivation, right?
Yeah.
So it's a vicious cycle. So someone has to actually come along, usually take your hand and say, come on, we're going for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And always at the end, oh my God, thank you so much for doing that. We've all done this. I suffer from depression.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm in that, if I don't have a good friend or family member who said, Roo, come on, off we go. No, off we go now, like today, like now. And they get me out of the door. Within 10 minutes, it's changing. And I know this, but I still need that sort of tribal help. And that's what families are for, an extended family, to help each other out this way, whether it's chosen family or blood family. We have to have that community.
Right.
Can't do it alone.
Yeah, and you have...
Subdivision life is... Yeah. Not going to work that way.
Yeah, you said, you talked about how lonely it could be, raising a child with autism. Have you found any, like, are you still feeling that way, or have you, like,
no,
found your community?
No, not anymore, because I've created a tribe. And one thing you'll see when you read The Long Ride Home is it went from me and Kristen feeling completely isolated, actually being completely isolated. Our parents in Europe, our friends couldn't cope with him, and we're out there by ourselves in the country. To now, we run a ranch where we serve for free, by the way, up to 20 families a week. We have a whole staff of really motivated, amazing people who are working with us all the time. And, we're like a big old hippie commune, but everyone has the degrees in neuroscience that they need to do this work. And all the horse training background if we're doing it with the horses. And so it's gone from complete isolation to a tribe. But I always knew that tribe is where it's at, because again, I'm a white African, and we're very tribal people. I grew up with a lot of extended family. I know my fifth cousins very well, that sort of thing. My uncle lives on one house on one side, my aunt lives on the other side, and all the cousins, we all ran around in a big pack. This is how kids are supposed to grow up, really. And then I realized that we were not doing this, and we were in trouble because of this, and that we had to create tribe. And the tribe happened through Rowan's story, and people reading the book and seeing the film and wanting to come and work with us, and it sort of grew from that. But everyone can find their tribe, and the way you find your tribe is to follow your child's interests. So with you, it will be finding out all the kids who love cars in your neighborhood, and there'll be a lot of them.
Yeah.
And you'll start putting together play dates based around that. And the next thing you know, you're running a vintage muscle car shop that you never thought you'd do, which is also an organic farm and gastro pub and art house cinema, and your son is running it, fast forward, 15 years from now. And a lot of those kids who were on those initial play dates are now working with you, producing these amazing NASCAR things. That's probably what will happen if you let it.
Mm-hmm.
But you must follow the child's interest. Must. they're showing you loud and clear what it is they want to do. Follow it. Because obsession is expertise,
mm-hmm.
and expertise is livelihood.
Yes.
I never thought I'd be doing this, but I am, and it's great.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm so much happier doing this than something which... And it doesn't stop me writing books and making films and training horses, but I now have a better reason to do it than just my own ego.
See, and you have followed your dream as well, which, you know, I think that if...
Put it this way, I've put my dream into service.
Right. Which, you know...
And if you put your dream into the service of your child's dreams, your child will usually make your dreams come true. But I was willing to abandon it. I remember I was a horse trainer, but I gave up horses. I thought Rome wasn't safe around that. He took me back. This wasn't my idea. You know, he was the one who forged the relationship with these healers that's taken us around the world on these amazing shows. He now runs his own web-based television show, Endangerous, endangeroussafaris.com. Write Dangerous, put an EN on the front, and Safaris, and see the stuff he's producing about the ecological pieces for animals that are both endangered and dangerous, or told through toilet humor. It's brilliant. I follow him, right? I put my dreams in, trust them, and they'll be okay, you know. Don't treat them like idiots, and don't make things into holy grails that they then have to rebel against you to find out, you know, and get themselves in trouble. That, you know, just give them straight answers. So that's what I did. So he's fine. He's getting huge, though, now. He's annoying me. He's much bigger than me now. He's getting tall. But he's so sweet. He has retained that scubbiness, sweetness. And I find that that is so true, actually, with so many adult autists that I meet, that they retain this, like, this quiet ego. It's like being in the presence of someone who's born enlightened. And that's very healing for us. And that raises the question for me of who's really the healer. Mm-hmm. Should we be paying these guys $100 an hour to hang out with them because they give us a break from our own egos and mirror neurons? Probably, actually. And then that goes back to the indigenous societies that, you know, there we are in the long ride home, and we're with the Bushmen and the Kalahari. We're in the with the Navajo. We're with the Aboriginals in Australia. And almost all of the healers display neuropsychiatric symptoms, often to the point where they might be institutionalized in if they're in our culture. And there, they're the healers, and at the center of the culture, and they have a job, regardless of job qualification. They have families, they have wives, they have husbands, and, you know, they're totally integrated. Maybe there's something to learn there.
Right.
Because they're more successful than we are as culture. They've been around for longer. And they've survived all the attempts at genocide. And they'll be around when we go.
Mm-hmm. This has been very interesting.
Interesting people.
So,
and by the way, I'm not saying to autism families, you have to go to Mongolia, or you have to ride a horse, or you have to go see a shaman. No. We did that because we followed Rowan, and that's where it took us.
Mm-hmm.
Follow your kid. It might not take you to Mongolia, it might take you to NASCAR. It might not take you to Mongolia, it might take you to the lab where they develop the video game that your kid is totally obsessed with. It might be apples. It might be balloons and bicycles. It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever it is, follow it. And if the interest shifts, follow the next one. Follow the next one. And they will take you home. That's the long ride home. The kid will take you home if you follow them.
Yeah, I was going to say, and you, again, answered another question. Is it really, and I think you and your wife had a different perspective on this at the end of the film, but you said, what does it matter that you've leapt forward? You had a different kind of perspective about what it was that helped Rowan. And, you know, just from observation, and I think that my child is much the same way. He was more free there. He was able to run and for the most part, until he were trying to get him up the mountain and all that. But just, you know, you were able to let him kind of do things. And I think that that's a lot less stressful in a lot of ways for a child who you're trying to get to put shoes on, who you're trying to get to keep their clothes on all day when they don't really feel like wearing clothes, and you know, just having as long as they're sensible.
But you live near the coast, right?
Mm-hmm, I do.
So you could homeschool at the beach.
I could.
You could do it.
I mean, financially,
and it might, and it might. You would have to figure it out, but everyone has to figure that out.
Right.
I had to figure it out financially too.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make it your job. So you serve an internship with your own child.
My husband thinks I would go crazy being at home by myself.
And if, and then you don't do it at home by yourself because that would go crazy. You start to reach out within the community for who are the like-minded people who might be interested in helping you do this.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, you have a cool homeschool group. Should be done in groups. And if the kids want to run around, you know, on the beach, barefoot and tearing their clothes off and stuff like that, they can and learn maths in French while they do it.
Right.
And then later on, gradually, you say to them, hey, listen, you know, there are bad adults out there who like to see naked kids for the wrong reasons. And they also get cold.
Right, yes.
You know, and, you know, you don't want to get a cold and so on and so on. So for these reasons and these reasons, when we leave this area, I'm going to have to ask you to put your clothes on. I don't say it's good. I don't say it's right. Because actually, it's 100 million degrees out and humid, and actually, I'd like to walk around in just my knickers. But I can't, because if I do that, you know, the rules of this silly society we live in, people will be mean to me, maybe even arrest me, so I can't do that. So we have to, is that okay? Are we cool? But right here, we can. And then that's always reasonable. People, they'll often respond so well to that. So you don't have to be fighting this fight that you're fighting. You could completely change your family culture if you want to. And you would find your way financially. And people like me, and there's a lot of people like me out there, would help you.
Yeah.
We try and whistle up support. We try and help you figure it out. Or you can go on with a situation that you don't really want to be in anyway.
Right.
But that's up to you.
Well, I've got to fight my husband on it.
And if your husband thinks you're crazy, so what? He's right. And that's why he married you. And that's why you're amazing. And that's why he loves you.
He knew I was crazy before he married me. So.
Yeah, exactly. So like, and what does he want? A wife who's not crazy? Like, how boring is that? What does he want? You know, come on. The craziness is the genius. That's your genius. That's why you're doing this blog. That's why you're doing what you're doing and looking for answers which you will help other people with on this blog.
Right. I'm reaching out and I'm trying to, I always wanted to be a writer and I haven't been able to do that.
But you will.
You know,
one day. Life is long. You will do it. And this is exactly what you're doing. You're serving your apprenticeship as a writer now, putting this book together, and as a journalist and interviewing interesting people and finding out interesting information.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're always coming from the point of view of I can't because of money, or I can't because people might think I'm an idiot, or so then what is for sure is we'll never do anything.
Right.
No one ever started a business or took a risk entrepreneurially if they were worried about how they would make it work financially beyond a certain point. I mean, there's the practical worry of, okay, what are we actually going to do? Let's strategize here. What have we got? What are our intellectual resources as well as our financial resources? How might we actually make this work? Blah, 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 blah. Can we downsize? What can we do? Blah, 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 blah. And what do we want to do? Because life is short. Maybe you actually want to be at that beach. And 2 years from now, I'll be interviewing you for a different website saying, so tell me how you make this amazing beach school work. Are you anywhere close to Wrightsville Beach?
Wilmington is about an hour and a half from where I'm at. Not too far.
Okay, I have a resource for you. I have a resource for you.
Okay.
He's called Jack Viorel. V-I-O-R-E-L. He runs Indojax Surf School.
Okay.
He does in surfing what we do in movement methods. He does it for surfing. He's right there. He's one of the best I've seen working with autistic kids. He's a teacher too. He's in the school district for years. Knows how to teach maths on a surfboard. He's right there in your go. Check him out.
Yeah.
And begin a conversation with him. He might be your collaborator in this.
Yeah, that would be, it would be interesting to kind of make our own way. There's really not a whole lot of like schools tailored for kids that have these kind of difficulties in this area. And
Sure.
it would be so nice to have a place where kids
To
felt
be
like
that
they were.
school, start that school.
Yeah.
Don't make that your job. Decide to do it now, today. NASCAR and surfing sounds like a brilliant way to learn Spanish to me.
Yes.
And do the whole K-12 curriculum. And then download the movement method course. Do it and you'll see how to adapt the K-12. For that. It's not that hard, actually. Easier, I would say, than doing it the other way.
Right.
Because the kids aren't interested the other way. It's trying to force information into a kid that's not really into it. But you do it this way, they're into it.
Right.
And if parents want the resources, kidsmustmove.com. And if they want to buy the book, it's thelongridehomebook.com. They can buy it off Amazon as well. But if they buy it from us, all the money goes to giving scholarships through Horse Boy Foundation to kids to go to places, either to our places, because we've got about 30 satellite places around the world now that do Horse Boy Movement Method, or to places like Indojacks, that I was talking about.
Okay.
So the resources are there, and there's amazing people out there doing amazing work. I would check out Christine Barnett's work, The Spark is her book. I would check out Arabella Carter Johnson and what she's doing with her daughter Iris Grace. Just type Iris Grace into Facebook and see what comes up.
Okay.
I won't spoil it for you. It'll make your jaw drop.
Okay, great.
Reach out to her, you know, and say, hey, I spoke to Rue. I think we're all thinking along the same lines. Yeah. And then when we launch the Movement Method website, you know, the new one, which is coming up, we'll talk again. And if you actually want to get something going, maybe we can help you.
That would be lovely.
So be that place on the coast that you wish was there. I had to become the school which the local school district couldn't be. But if you read The Long Ride Home, it really shows you how we got there.
I'll have to check that one out. All right.
I mean it. I really will help you.
I really would love
to. I really urge you, go on Kids Must Move, download the thing, do the course. It'll cost you, like, do it. Then talk to me, and I will help you. I'll help you set up a 501c3. I will talk to you about how to raise money. I will help you put together a mission statement and a plan, and blah 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 blah. You could start a charter school there on the beach. I'm telling you, you can. Yes, you can.
Okay.
And make it all about us. You so can. And then NASCAR will come in and sponsor you. I mean, believe me.
Yeah.
Stay in touch. All right. Go on the website. Start with that, and then when you're done. Oh, and then also just within 48 hours, just tell me if you haven't had the book. No, what am I doing? Sorry, I'm telling her to just make sure she sends you a book. So just contact me as soon as you've gone through that online course.
Okay.
All right. And
so
I
will send you an email when I got it up, and I will definitely keep in touch.
Fantastic.
Okay.
I can't wait to see how you get on.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right.
Cheers, then.
All right. Bye.